Thank you. It's good to be here today. I'm Scott Harkness. I'm going to kick off, and then I'm going to have Barb Absher, who's from Cornerstone Church. This is actually we did our dress rehearsal at her church last week, so now we're really proficient this time, hopefully. I wanted to just start off with reading something that they gave us that'll kind of give you a sense for what's going on in Romania. Freedom is a word that most of us take for granted. We have the freedom to have a job, own a home, take a vacation, or go shopping. The Romanians have been granted these freedoms too, yet many are never able to experience them. Although Romania has made great strides in catching up with Western Europe, much of Romania is still trying to overcome the many years of control. Many of the people lack the knowledge and the will to better themselves. In January 2007, Romania was accepted into the European Union. This status may bring new opportunities into Romania, yet will probably create a larger gap between the general population of Romania and the abandoned and orphaned of Romania. There is one generation of children that the government calls the throwaway generation. Heart to Heart International was started in 1994, and its ministers, in a way, to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we must be also willing to assist these orphanages in medical relief, distribution of clothing, teaching and nurturing the children towards a productive place in society. Through the orphanage outreach, we can share the gospel and share a little of ourselves as we walk into the steps of Christ and strive to be like him. It's funny, my wife and I, we got back from Romania, and our granddaughter goes, "So, Grandma, how was Mania?" You know, well, she's 3 years old, so we'll give her that. I think this is my 12th international mission trip, so I'd have to go through my old passports to recount them all. But what I usually do is I like to do a journal, and I take notes pretty much every day. I might write a line or two down, so it kind of gives me a reference, and then I can authenticate the accuracy of, you know, what I've come up with. I'm going to blast through real quick, kind of a quick history of Romania. You know, they're like Poland. They've been picked upon and persecuted and invaded. The Moors came through, Attila the Hun, the Turks. You know, they had engagements in World War I and then also World War II, and I'll go into that a little bit more. But actually, the Romans came in through the Caspian Sea, which is about 2.5 hours where we were. We were stationed in Bucharest, which is the capital. It's a city of about 3 million people. It's a beautiful city. They call it the Paris of the East. It's got a lot of the similarities. The city was set up mirroring how Paris was set up and designed. They have the Arc de Triomphe and all that too, just like Paris. They've lost a lot of population. At one time it was 22 million, now it's down to about 19 million. And a lot of that is there's not a lot of jobs and opportunities there. And the kind of the brainwashing that I'll explain to you a little bit. They just don't know how to make decisions and really think for themselves the way most people do. Okay, World War II came around, and they actually sided with Hitler because Hitler came through and said, we're either going to take you over or join forces with us, or we're going to take you over. So they joined forces. And then about 2/3 of the way through the war, they realized that Hitler was crazy. They finally figured that out. And so they joined forces with the Allies. And they really think, the Romanians, that they are responsible for the victory for World War II. So let them think that. They can write their own history books. God bless them. So then at the Treaty of Versailles, right after the conclusion of the war, the four big heads at the time were Mussolini, Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt. And they met, and they basically divided up Europe. So Stalin really wanted Romania, because Romania is very self-sufficient. They have all of the natural resources that a country has. They have timber, they have natural gas, they have petroleum. So the Soviets thought that that would be a good match for them. At one time they had kings and that feudal system and stuff that went through there. And so we actually got, one day we had an opportunity to go to a castle that was built by King Harold, and it took 41 years to build. And there'll be some of the slides. Have we started the slides yet? Yeah, we do. Okay, good. The people are, well, it's 87% Orthodox, Romanian Orthodox. So Christians are kind of viewed as a little bit of an outsider. They're definitely the minority. And I'm going to go back to about in the mid-60s when a guy took over Ceausescu. And he's basically a guy that had about an eighth grade education. And he decided that he went to the Soviets and said, you know, put me in charge and I'll give you all the natural resources and everything. And I'll basically kind of be your puppet leader, which he was. And he was kind of the first start of the downfall in that these people were told that the state, Ceausescu thought he was bigger than Jesus, quite frankly. And he did that fear factor, and that was the type of governing that he did, in that he said the state is in a better position to take care of your children than you are as a parent. So that's that kind of socialism, communistic slant. And so he encouraged people to have large families, which they did. And if you didn't have a large family, he would basically have doctors come and check you out to see why you didn't have at least five kids. I mean, horrible. Everybody worked, but the grandparents basically took care of the family, the kids, because everybody worked, so they were out working. And they found their grace through work, and that's how, you know, they thought grace worked that way. So anyway, and if you were a doctor there and you tried to do contraceptive, you know, birth control measures or something like that, that was a 7-year prison sentence. So pretty tough situation to be in. Anyway, that's kind of the history. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to try to shorten this real quick, but the kids that we had there, and I'll let the ladies elaborate a little more on this, but it was funny because the people that we met with, we stayed in an orphanage house, and they said, she always found it, one of the leaders of the ministry there said, she always found it interesting how what kid would come up and you would connect or bond with. Well, I had one that was 12 years old. His name was Florentine, and basically the Health and Social Services came in and gathered him because he and his mother were begging on the street. So he got brought into this orphanage, and the way the orphanages work is if you're a little baby and you can't raise your head at a certain, you know, point in development, you're kind of go into a special needs group, and they have that stigmatization that you're kind of categorized, and once you get in there, you can't really get out. Anyway, so they thought this kid, when they picked him up and brought him into the parish, which is one of the five orphanages that we had involvement with, he got that stigmatization that he would never be able to get out of that special needs. And they originally, the first year he was there, he was below level. Then he was really on the lower spectrum. And then within a year, he was at the top. So, you know, with some guidance and nurturing and stuff, he was able to pull himself through. The first day I saw him, his lips were bloodied, and I reached in my pocket and gave him chapstick. And I saw him about 4 days later, and he runs up to me and he goes, like, my lips are healed, you know, which was pretty cool. And, you know, we did some sporting events and things with him and, you know, just tried to love on all these kids. And at the end, we were ready to leave, and he came up to us and wanted to get in the van with us. He goes, can you take me back to America, you know? And just, you know, you can't, the way the rules are there, you can't really adopt. They haven't had an adoption since 2001. The rules are very strict and regulatory. So unless you have Romanian descent and you live there, you can adopt. But most of it's foster homes now. However, they do have some progressive laws. And for example, maternity leave, if a woman there goes on maternity leave and she's working, they'll give her between 70 and 80% of her salary, and it's a 2-year maternity leave. So I thought that was pretty progressive. We arranged to have a trip one day. I wrote to Jody Sorrells, and Heart to Heart International is based out of San Diego. It's Ramona. It's about 30 miles north, east of San Diego. And I said, I want to do something fun for the kids. And I was thinking maybe we could go to the Black Sea or something like that, and they do that a lot. But what we ended up doing was we sponsored, and Cornerstone helped us out with this, but we did a We took them to a trampoline park and then to McDonald's. And the thing I liked about McDonald's was, you know, these kids had never been there. They're like deer in headlights. I had two cash registers going, and this is rush hour in Bucharest. You know, the kids would come up, and I said, whatever they want, they get. And they'd look at the menu, and they couldn't even make a decision. So we take for granted all the little decisions that we make on a daily basis. And here these kids, you know, didn't really have a clue of how to go to McDonald's. My little guy, I waited till everybody was through. I think we had 37 in that group. He waited until I was done before he'd even start his big fancy, which is their equivalent of like a Big Mac. So I thought that was pretty cool. I'm going to turn the mic over, but before I do that, I just want to thank everyone here that contributed the quarters. You know, I wanted to give every kid a quarter, you know, because it says in God we trust, and I wanted them to have a little souvenir of our visit to them. And a lot of people did, you know, I got toothbrushes from the Masons, I got toothpaste, Wendy and Jeff Reese drove us there and back to the airport, which was wonderful, and Wendy made hats and people donated washcloths, and just everything you did was all really well received, and a lot of those are going to be given as Christmas gifts. So with that, I'll let Barb come up next. And I'm going to sit down.
First thing I want to say is thank y'all too for y'all's part in all of this. And I'm going to speak a whole lot from the heart of where I was and what happened from my side, personal side. So the first picture was me, and I was reading a story of Noah's Ark to a group of children at Ballantyre Orphanage. I did have an interpreter. Her name was Mariana, and she is one of the H2H missionaries. By trade, I'm a teacher assistant. So from a teaching standpoint, the orphanage was really tough because we're taught from day one in a school that you're to lay down the rules, set the boundaries, and you hope that if you're really tough to start with, you can get the behaviors under control and it'll be a better year. Plus, with the threats of lawsuits and such in public schools today, you reframe a lot from speaking about the gospel or even being really loving on these kids. But in the orphanages, you're told that regardless of the behaviors, that you're to show compassion and love, and you've got to do that from the get-go with these children in order to build up their trust, because until you build up their trust, they're not going to have anything to do with you, let alone listen to you. So they had to feel comfortable and cared for by us, and sometimes leaving that school mentality behind for what you needed to do there was kind of tough, and it was especially tough in the orphanage of Parrish because that's the special needs orphanage, and those children aren't given a formal education. They're not allowed one because they've been labeled, and they have some people that come in and do some classes with them, and H2H comes in and does the character classes, which is the teaching them the Bible. But it's tough, and depending on what orphanage you're in will depend on the education that you get. Plus, in Romania, if you're like kindergarten to fourth grade, you'll go to school like from 8 to noon, whereas the older kids will go, they'll come in at noon, come behind you till like 4, because they share classrooms. And I can remember Jen telling us, and Jen is the head of H2H on the ground there in Romania at the team house. She told us at the end of the day, whose voice are these orphans going to listen to? Is it going to be the staff that puts them down a lot, or is it going to be the voice of the Americans who come in and tell them that they do have worth and that they are loved? And that's one reason it's important that Americans go, to show them that they're investing in their lives. And one intern, they have interns, and these are teenagers to early 20s who come every summer. And one intern really spoke to my heart, and her name was Natalie. She has been going over there since she was 15, and for 8 years now. But the thing is, you can see that she's making an impact. But the truth is, whether you go for every summer or whether you go for just a couple weeks, we all make an impact. Okay. The truth is, the babies were my favorite. That's where I found my niche. But I found out before we left that we were going to have a teen girl camp. And so I'm thinking, what? Because I'm thinking orphans, babies, little kids. But the truth is, orphans come in all sizes too. So anyway, I had a few conversations with God about that because I just wasn't really sure what was going to happen with teenagers. And the picture of the pool, that's a picture of the first day at teen camp. And these kids love the pool at the teen house. When they first bought this house, they thought they would have to fill this pool in because it was in such bad shape. But God had other plans for it. That's one thing that draws these children and wants to keep them coming to the H2H program. And whatever gets them there, they learn about God while they're there. Now, we heard a lot of worship songs in the church in Romania. And when you're listening to a song being sung in Romanian, it is so beautiful. And you might even pick up, I know what that song is. But you can't sing it in American when you're listening to it in Romanian. We tried. But during this teen camp, the girls would sing. That would be the first thing they would do in the mornings. They would sing these worship songs. And I have a little snippet of it on my phone if any of you want to hear it later. But that part just touched my heart. And I'm thinking, I love women's ministry. But I had no idea that these teenagers would touch my heart like they did. Now, Melissa and Heather, which is two more H2H missionaries from America, one's been there a year on the ground and one's been two, and they were teaching them a lesson from Jonah and about second chances. And I have a habit of telling all the ladies in our study groups, we have a story. We have a story to share, and we need to share it. And it hit me as I'm looking at these girls. After they find Jesus, they're going to have such amazing stories to tell. Okay, Corny is short for Cornelia. She is an H2H missionary to the baby hospital. She's also a success story of H2H. She was raised in an orphanage, and she was one of the first transition students, graduates. Now, she never did get around to telling me her whole story, but she did tell me, if it hadn't been for Jen, that she didn't know where she would be today. Now, I hit it off with her, and she was always fun to be around. I really enjoyed Corny. And she's the one who would set us up to go to the baby hospital. And she loved those babies, and she was so good with them. But I'm here to tell you, the baby hospital was tough from the very get-go. We saw things that were appalling, that just shocked us, and we would feel like here in America, just very inhumane, even though years ago, some of the same things happened here. So my first trip to the baby hospital was very saddening. The second time I went, it was like I just got angry about it. But Jen had talked to us during the orientation about the culture, so I just had to put that in perspective. Because even though the circumstances were basically the same every time we went, the understanding got easier, even though we didn't have to like a lot of the things that we saw. And photos weren't allowed inside the baby hospital. It's a state-run facility, but Corny, bless her heart, she'd sneak our phones and she'd take pictures of the babies for us, and so I wouldn't take anything for the baby photos I have. And I've heard it said, and you probably have too, if you go on a mission trip where children are involved, you always have one special child that you connect with in some way. That's the little one that stole my heart. His name is Mihai. 3 months old and oh, so tiny. I would have classified him as failure to thrive. I was told the very first time I picked him up, no one will ever want this baby. He has already been declared special needs. Some babies are fortunate enough to go into foster care, but he would not be chosen. He was too tiny, and he was labeled. I was shocked, and my heart just ached for that little fellow. And I love this picture because he's locked eyes with me, and he's smiling. Because the first day I held him, I never saw him smile. However, the next time I held him even longer and fed him again, I could see a grin. But by the third time, he was actually looking at me. Now, we'd only get to stay from 3:30 to 6:30 in the evenings, and that was only 3 hours, but they were precious hours every time we went. So he got to where he'd smile, and he'd light up whenever I'd sing to him, run my finger around his face, or kiss his head. Go to the next one. It was priceless. The sweetest smile ever. Corny took that photo for me of him laying in his crib. And I look at that and think, how could anybody not want him? And now in the baby hospital, I'd hold those babies. And I held other ones other than Mihai, but mostly him. And I would pray over each child. Now, at the end of our time there, Jen talked to us about God's sovereignty and how we did we really believe that. And I had that had already showed up for me. God had already been working on me. And I know God is sovereign. And I truly believe that. So, if I believe it, I need to live it, right? So, as I would pick Mihai up, I would pray something to this effect every time. Lord, you birthed this baby a Romanian. I do not know why, but you did. You will take him home with you while he is still a baby, or you will grow him up in Romania. And that may be through an orphanage, but even if it is, Lord, I pray your hand of protection on him. I pray he comes to know you, Jesus, and to make you known. You have a plan and a purpose for his life. Your word says so, and I claim that for him. Put your love and protection around him, and when I leave, please allow others to hold, rock, and love him too. So the last time I saw him, I also added, I may never see Mihai again, Lord, but he's your child. I give him to you to bless and take care of, knowing you've got this. I've got to walk away, but you will stay. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' precious name, amen. And I would shed tears every time I prayed that prayer, because I realized I had no control. And I had given him all I could give him while I was there. And the rest is up to God. So, the last morning we're there to see the babies. It was on Sunday morning. They don't have church till 1:30 on Sundays, by the way. So we were able to go so we could say our goodbyes. And it was getting almost time, and they were telling us, you've got to be ready to get downstairs. They'll be picking you up to go to church. And I threw up this really quick prayer. I asked God, please let us feed the babies one more time. Because it was just a sweet, sweet thing. And I prayed, let me feed Mihai one more time. Please let him drink the whole bottle. Let me burp him and lay him in his crib. And please don't let him cry when I leave. Because the truth is, we could hear him crying sometimes when we would leave, and that was hard. God answered that prayer. Now, he usually drank well for me, but this was the first and only time I ever saw him drink the whole bottle. He took every drop. He burped well, and he didn't cry as I laid him down. I patted his back, finding it hard to walk away. And as I teared up, I walked out, knowing I had to trust God with his life, and knowing that God had answered that prayer that quick. He took care of it. And I know that he'll answer the other prayer as well. I hide my tears well most of the time, and I tried to hide them here too. And sometimes I get really emotional, like right now, thinking about him. The truth is, I have cried not only for Mihai, but for all the babies. And not only for the babies, but for all the children. And not just for the children who are in the orphanage, but for the children of Romania who are growing up in the Orthodox Church. who don't know Jesus, and for the adults. You see, Scott touched on it a little bit. Jen told us, actually, in Romania, we are considered a cult. They call us the repenters, and they do not believe what we believe. They do not believe that you need to repent of anything. H2H is there to bridge the gap and show them Jesus one step at a time. Jen told us that these young adults who've grown up in the orphanages and that who've gone through this transition program, who are now holding down jobs, marrying, raising their own children, and breaking that cycle that they have known all their lives, is because they've come to know Jesus. And they told her, and this was profound to me, that if they could relive their life, they would go back and relive the horrors of the orphanages all over again in order to find Jesus. Now that's a testimony. If they'd grown up in a Romanian home, they would not have been able to know him like they do now. And they acknowledge that. Yes, God is working in Romania. One final note before I hush, because the truth is we all have personal stories and we could go on and on. But Corny told me one on that last Sunday that she had came to America and that she had spoke at the church of Jim and Jody, the founders of H2H, several years back. And a side note here, you cannot raise money in Romania to be a missionary. If you want to be a missionary, you have to raise money in America. So they're having to raise money here in America for all their Romanian missionaries as well. Well, anyway, she told me that one thing she realized when she was here in America was how she was thankful that God had made her a Romanian. And I teared straight up because people, for the whole 2 weeks I was there, I was thanking God he had birthed me in America. So why, I asked, and this is what she said. Americans have so much stuff, we do not see Jesus well. And I think she's right. So if you're sitting out there today and you haven't been sure of why we went or why God would want us to go or what your part was or could have been, I hope after you hear all of us, not just me and Scott, that you will have some answers or you'll better understand. So my challenge to all y'all is to please pray for the orphans, the babies, the H2H staff. Pray for the transition students to make Jesus known to others. And pray for God to raise up more people who'll go and spend just a little bit of time there. Not everyone can or wants to go, and not everyone has the resources to go. But there is one thing we can all do as a Christian. We can all come alongside them in prayer. And remember, we didn't go to Romania to fix what was wrong in Romania. We went to show God's love. And remember, the disciples did not ask Jesus to teach us to preach or teach us to administer or teach us to heal. No, it was, Lord, teach us to pray, because prayer changes things. Thank you. Now, I will introduce Barbara. She is from Cornerstone. She was my buddy while I was there. God definitely was showing me blessings before I ever got there. And she was one. I had not met Barbara till then. We became good buddies. We needed each other through this trip, and God blessed that. So she has a lot of things to tell you, too.
excuse me. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity that I had to go to Romania. I was very blessed to be able to go. I want to thank you, too, for your prayers while we were in Romania, because I definitely felt those prayers. I had so much peace about going to Romania. I was never afraid. I didn't worry about what's going to happen, what are we going to do, what are we going to eat. I just thank you for the prayers, because I had a tremendous amount of peace about this. And I knew there was no question for me. It wasn't a, well, you know, maybe I should go, maybe I really shouldn't go, maybe, no. I knew that God wanted me to go on this mission trip. And I also want you to know that during this, the teen girl camp that we had, that I gave my testimony for the first time there. The first slide should be the team house, and this is where we stayed. It was in Bucharest. This team house actually could accommodate a lot of people. It had a bedroom in the basement. Most of the beds were dorm style, so like one bedroom in the basement could hold 8 to 10 people. It had 3 floors. We were on the 3rd floor. Donna was my roommate, and she was, of course, a great roommate. Scott and Naomi were also on that 3rd floor. And as Scott mentioned, there were days that it was like 97 degrees, 98, and the heat index would be up to 100, and there is no air conditioning in this house. But it, like I say, it could accommodate a lot of people. The next slide is Donna and myself and Naomi standing in front of the baby hospital. They had a guard there on the outside of the hospital, and you know, in America, most places you can take a picture. You know, we take pictures, videos, just pretty much wherever we want to. Not in Romania. I had to have Corny translate and get permission for me to take this picture. And the baby part that we went to was on the 4th floor, and we had to walk the 4 flights of stairs. When we were in Romania, I don't think I ever was on an elevator. We walked, I walked more steps there than I think I have in a really long time. The next slide should be Corny and myself and some baby supplies. As Donna said, and especially if you don't know, I'm a nurse. The baby hospital was, even though I was drawn to the baby hospital, I wanted to be there, I wanted to go there. The very first time I went there, I was so upset. It just, and I know that they, this is what they do all the time, and they feel that, you know, this is the right way to take care of the babies, but it was so behind from what we do. And in the hospital, you know, we never run out of baby wipes. But there, they didn't have any. They ran out of baby wipes, and they would just put these children like under running water, under the faucet, to clean them. They were running out of shampoo. And so one evening during the teen camp, they took the teen girls to a mall. They don't get to go to a mall. And was letting them get some ice cream there. And Donna helped me, and I just thanked the, I had some private donations from individuals in the county, and I used some of that money to go and buy supplies for the baby hospital. And Donna went with me to help carry these supplies. And it was not with a shopping cart. So, but we got these supplies and got them to the babies. The next slide is the head nurse and myself, and that was kind of a neat opportunity that she had been a nurse for a while, and as I have. And actually my husband had the foresight into thinking about taking some stethoscopes, and that was something I didn't think of and thought, well, surely they would have stethoscopes, but I never saw anyone wearing a stethoscope. So these were actually pediatric stethoscopes. They had animals on them, and the head nurse, when she looked at them, she had asked Corny, and then Corny translated to me and asked me, she wanted to know if they were real. And I said, yes, they're not play, they're real, they work. So that was kind of interesting. The next slide is as Donna and we'll all talk about children that tug at our at your heartstrings, mine was myself and this baby. And just to give you an idea, Mihai and this baby were the same age, just to tell you the difference in the sizes. This child did not have a first name. In the Romanian Orthodox, if you have not been baptized, you do not have a first name. So while we were there, we called him John. That's hard to imagine in our culture. That's one of the first things we give children is their first name, but he will not have a name until he's an official name until he is baptized. The another thing that was, you know, when a baby, the identification card that's above their crib, I really hadn't looked at it the first couple times I went. But one day when I was holding him and rocking him and walking with him, I looked over. I could never pronounce his last name. Corny had told me his last name a couple times, but when I looked at it, the first four letters of his last name was my first name. And I thought, wow, you know, and I know that had to be a God thing. It just floored me that, because I looked at it and I looked at it again, that it had my first name. At the baby hospital, they still use glass bottles. The formula that they gave him was more than lukewarm. Not hot, but it was very warm. When they feed babies, they don't hold them. When we fed the babies, we did hold them. But the workers there did not hold the babies. And they don't burp babies like we do. They just do a few taps and that's it. So they feed the baby the bottle laying on their back in the crib. When the baby's finished with the bottle, they take the child by one arm, flip them over, pat them on the back a few times. They are left on their stomach with a face down with like what they use as a burp pad, but really it was like a onesie. And as a nurse, of course, we don't do things that way anymore. And of course, as a nurse, we would think that would be a teaching opportunity. But if I wanted to go back to the baby hospital, you know, you do it their way. You know, I was the foreigner. So, and this is the way things were done. And so you had to go along with that. There were three rooms up there, and the one room for me was very difficult to go in. There were some children that had severe disabilities that were more than infants. They were, you know, 4, 5, and 6 years old, but they were severe disabilities. One child had would bang their head on the crib, and what they did for that solution was they tied that child down, arms and legs. And, you know, we don't do that here. We may have done it back in the 60s or 70s, but that is something that's just not done. And fortunately, Corny was very good with these children, and what she would do, if the child was crying and having a really bad day, she would untie the child. They would let her untie. I think we said it was 4 years old. And she would use her phone, put it here and put it on music and put the child's head there and walk. And then the child would stop crying and would stop doing the head banging. But that was very difficult. So it was really a very hard place to go, but it was someplace I wanted to keep going back. And there, like Donna had said, it was in the afternoons, and Corny would call maybe an hour before. A lot of times we would sign up. They would only take two or three at a time, and we never knew until about an hour before, after Corny made the call, if we were going to be allowed to go. The next couple of photos is what Scott had talked about as well, with going to the trampoline park. It was an indoor trampoline park. Again, no air conditioning. I'd say Scott had the foresight to start those wheels going before we ever left to go over to Romania. These kids really had a great time. I thank you for, you know, any prayers, the donations, because that's what this went to, this fun day. Even the staff was really looking forward to this. We went on a Friday. They were asking, are we going to get to go? And, of course, we needed them to help, you know, with the children, to keep up with everybody. We were each assigned a child. Mine was Johnny. He is 9 years old. He is the one on the right. It would be this way. He's on this side. Yeah, he's 9 years old. McDonald's was a huge highlight. I was looking forward to McDonald's because it had air conditioning and ice. I mean, it's really, you know, they just don't put much ice in drinks, and when it's hot out and your drink is just above lukewarm, it's really hard to get your thirst. So I thought, I was kind of pumped about it. So, but when we get there, they don't have the ice dispenser. And they did not give you your drink with ice in it, but it was cold. Johnny, I had him by the hand, but he was just wanting to hurry up and get up there. And I knew he was excited, but I didn't fully understand. The translator that was with me, she said, you know, you have to remember in the orphanages, there's no decision about what you're going to get to eat. So he thought he would just go up there, pick up a tray, and go on. And it's like, Johnny, we need to, of course, the translator was asking him, do you want a hamburger? Do you want a cheeseburger? Do you want chicken McNuggets? You know, oh my, choices, you know. That's something Romanian kids do not get. And then you get a choice of a drink. Do you want Sprite? Do you want Coke? Oh. So, you know, when these kids, like Johnny's age, say he goes to take a shower, his clothes is not his own. The clothes he's wearing goes to the wash for somebody else to wear, and he's handed clean clothes. They're not his. They're just clothes that are clean that day. So this was really a special day for them. The other thing that Jen had mentioned to us too, can you imagine getting ready to leave the orphanage and you're around 20 years old, and this goes along with the decisions. You've never been to a grocery store before. I never thought about all the decisions that you make when you go to a grocery store, but most of us, you know, our parents or grandparents or aunt and uncle or all of those took us to the grocery store, and we saw those decisions being made. These kids have never had that. They're just turned out, and that's another decision that they need to make. But H2H is really good. They have a transition program to help them adjust to when they leave the orphanage. The last couple pictures I had with some donated sidewalk chalk. These were adults with disabilities. Most of them had autism. Some were nonverbal. But they loved the sidewalk chalk. They loved making decisions of which one they wanted to use, just you spending that special time with them. So something just that simple really was a big thing for them. And the last thing I just wanted to mention, like the Romanian kids that made a connection with you, especially these with that group that was with the sidewalk chalk, and they came over when we were at Ballantar outside. If you don't like somebody in your personal space, you would have been really uncomfortable. These kids not only touch you, they'd smell your hair, touch your hair, very loving. So that's what I found in Romania. I'll let Naomi go there.
So before, during, and after the trip, I had some confusion in understanding the purpose for a short-term versus a long-term mission trip. For the most part, it seems like I've been involved in things where you build relationships over time. And through that sharing of love, people come to know the Lord and you have those opportunities. And so when you have 2.5 weeks there, as we did, it was a bit challenging to figure out what your purpose was and how God would use you and how it would mostly be beneficial for the kingdom of God. And it seemed like God gave me this example of the difference between a marathon and a relay race. And so we were really part of a relay race, a relay team, if you will. And the hard part was that we did not get to see that baton passed. You know, who's going to come up behind us and love on these kids? But we have to remember that God is their coach. And so I wrote a poem to just kind of encapsulate my feelings regarding how I now see ministry versus more of the narrow mind that I did before. I now think of the kingdom of God as a brilliant and intricate tapestry that our loving Father is steadily weaving through time. We are the threads that touch and blend with others, woven by His Spirit. Some threads are used together for a brief moment, and others are used for a long time, but each for a specific purpose within His great design. I would like to tell you a little bit about three of the threads that I touched, had the privilege of touching in Romania. And one of the verses that keeps resonating with me since returning is Esther 4:14. Yet who knows that you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Yosef was my four-month-old. We all had four-month-olds that we first got attached to in the baby hospital. And I loved feeding him and holding him and praying over him. And the one thing that he enjoyed so much was having the opportunity to bounce on my legs, with his legs, and build those leg muscles up, and things that we take for granted. We do that with our children, our grandchildren, other people's babies all the time. And I worried, thinking, Lord, how is he going to develop spiritually? How is he going to develop emotionally, having been abandoned? And even physically, just practically, how's he going to develop? So it was so deep to see the big smile on his face as every time he jumped and got his legs up there and was just really proud of himself. Such a neat thing. And as I began to worry, God spoke to my heart that he, in fact, would. He began the good work in him, and he would be faithful to complete it. And even this morning, God brought the Psalm 27 to mind. When my mother and father forsake me, then the Lord will take care of me. So I began to pray for Yosef that he would be a strong man of God, that he would lead the Romanian people to Jesus. And I really envision that the three of us ladies that got attached to our babies would someday sit in heaven with Mihai and Jonathan and Yosef, and they will tell us great stories of how God worked in their lives and he worked through their lives. And we were able to be that such a time as this, as we could lift them in prayer. I would want to tell the ladies something special. I received an email from Corny, who they spoke of and she wanted to let us know that the babies are doing well in the orphanage. So I did want to share that with you this morning. Levy was a 9-year-old boy that there was a glimmer in the leader's eyes when she gave me Levi. It's like she was searching and she was like, aha, you. And so I was partnering with Levi, and I didn't think much of it. I was just excited to be fun, to be partnered with a little guy. And two or three leaders separately came up to me and said, I'll help you with him. I'll be there if you need some help. And I began to get a little frightened. And he truly was the wild child. And we ran nonstop through all the trampolines, through the golf that Scott set up. And we ran and ran, and he jumped, and he learned that he could do flips. And he must have said, watch me, 1,000 times. And each time he said, watch me, I responded with what we all said in Romanian, which was not too many words, bravo. And anyone that came by, he would say, watch me, watch me. And he was so hungry for attention. He could not get enough attention, and later found out that his mother and father had used him and his brother, taught them how, they were little, so taught them how to sneak in little areas and steal. And then at some point, they were taken and put into the orphanage. So he was not the most loving, warm child, but when we sat in the back of the van, when no one was looking, he was cuddling next to me. So it's our secret, and yours now, that he has a soft spot, and it just gave me such a soft spot in my heart, not just for him, but for all kind of unlovable, unloving children, people. They've got stories that we don't know about, and they have hurts that we don't know about. And as I prayed for him, I again worried and said, God, I just worry that he will run away. He will not make it through the orphanage and the opportunities that H2H is giving for the transition home, that he's just going to run away and go beg or worse, steal or wind up in prison or something like that. And God quieted my heart again with saying to me that with man, things are impossible, but with God, all things are possible. So, my last little gal I want to talk to you about, her name is Alina, and she was 14. And pretty much polar opposites from Leave You, she stayed by me and loved on me and gave me kisses and told me she loved me, and I hadn't really done anything. And it was a little uncomfortable at first because I haven't done anything for her. And God was speaking to my heart that that's how he is to us. We don't have to do anything. He just loves on us. And so I quickly got over that after God really quickening my heart and said, I love you. And she always would respond with, I love you more. So I had the opportunity during the girls' camp to French braid her hair and paint her little toenails and give her a pedicure and massage and do her fingernails and just give her the love that I could. And Barb talked about how beautiful, or Donna talked about how beautiful it was to worship with these young ladies. We sang next to them, side by side in Romanian. Luckily, we had the words. And they would just stare at us and connect with us, and they had tears in their eyes, and you could see that God has started such an amazing work in their hearts, and none of them wanted to go home after the 3 days at camp. They did not want to go back to the orphanage. They wanted to stay with us. And of course, my little gal, the last day that we were with our kids at that particular orphanage, she clung to me, I clung to her, and I left a part of my heart with her, and I have a part of her heart. So again, if you'll remember these names and pray with us, we would be so thrilled to have that, have you pray with us. And I really also want to thank you all for your prayers, for the things that you gave, that they're either going to receive in a school packet. Some of the things they are going to wait and give them in a school packet. Some they allowed us to give right away, and they were thrilled with everything that we gave. One of the things that we learned, we're taking home with us. They hold on to things loosely because they're probably not going to have them. And we had a missionary earlier in the year that came and talked about that. So they hold on to things loosely, but relationships they cling to, and they really look forward to the return of Americans. They run to the van and want to can't wait till we get out. They run and wave goodbye as we left. As Scott said, his little guy snuck in between the two of us thinking he could just come home with us. And so there's a lot of emotions going on there. So we really appreciate your prayers. We felt your prayers. We felt this big bubble of your prayers and your love and support that you gave us. And through those prayers, we have that opportunity to partner with the Holy Spirit and be a part of that great big design that God has for his kingdom. So again, thanks so much.